Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Still disappointed by yesterday's result. In order to be a real successful team, you got to finish. I think that's something that we can learn as a football team. You know, we didn't finish, and so at the end of the day, we didn't get the result that we all desired. Obviously, we had some injuries. Cam, as I think you all know, is out of the hospital. Will be week to week, you know, with his pulmonary contusion. Obviously, Josh, you know, I know Josh is the next question. Josh is going to be out this week, but Josh will be week to week from there on. Again, it's unfortunate. Again, it's something I told our team. We got to do everything we can to protect our quarterback. I mean, this is a tough sport. It's a shoulder clavicle issue right now that he's working through. Cody Kessler, there's a good chance Cody will start this week. It'd be Cody, but what I meant by that, till we get the game plan going and those type of things. I mean, obviously, he's the next guy up. Cody will be out there playing. There's no doubt about that.
You can't really, you know, expect something like this to happen. There's no plan for it, but the only plan you can have is your process. You know, like I said, after the game, I've been preparing as a starter since I got here, and you never know when an opportunity will come or when a chance, you know, will come your way. But the last thing you want to do is not be right. So for me, I've been preparing this way the whole time. I guess what the NFL is, you know, you get opportunities, you don't know when they're going to come. Continue to work within this building, within this team, and just get ready to go.
A number of different things. You know, we got to get better. That's just all I can tell you is we got to get better in that area. We know what the things are in terms of our breakdowns, and there have been many runs in pass. Also, you know, we certainly haven't blown the doors off from a scoring standpoint either, but those are the kind of things you work on the first couple games. It's two ball games, 1-1. So we're not 1-15. So we got to look at it that way and make certain that we continue to improve. But we also got to address our issues, and we got some issues now. Let's not kid ourselves, you know, and we got to work at it. You got to face the brutal facts of where you are. You got to get to work and get them straightened out. All of the obvious things, you know. I mean, there's far too many for me to even go into that we'll address. I'm just talking about we didn't stop the run as well as we'd like. We didn't finish the drive. There's too many penalties. It's obvious. So there's a number of things like that. Usually in the second game of the year, you're going to have a lot of stuff. Unless you're playing perfect ball, which there's no such thing, you know, you're going to have a number of things you got to get straightened out. We got young guys that are playing for us that have to learn and have to understand exactly how to get things done against a certain type of technique, those kinds of things. So those are the kind of things you go through and work your way through. We got a lot to work through.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The extravaganza is indeed on your radio. What's going on? Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday afternoon edition right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Bob France with you. Mr. Cushlin is alongside. How you doing, Mr. K?
Doing all right on this Tuesday.
Indeed. Kind of a slow day yesterday. I mean, you know, with neither baseball team here in September, now late September, I think it's fair to say we're past mid-September on 9/20.
Yeah.
You know, neither team played last night as we come down the home stretch. The Indians with a magic number of 7 trying to salt away the championship of the Central, the Tigers. Quite frankly, they're playing for their postseason lives. Every single game starting tonight is essentially a must-win. Brad Ausmus said as much. It wasn't quite on par with Herm Edwards, "You play to win the game." And I'm stealing that from Chris McCoskey at the Detroit News, but it's about as close as you get. Brad Ausmus said very simply, "We have to win." It's as simple as that. They can't be playing 500 baseball now in the final 2 weeks of the baseball season and expect to get into the wild card. Jim Cushlin, do you think the Tigers have the mettle to get this done?
I partially still do. I mean, there are still some interesting teams ahead of them, mostly the other teams from the American League East. I partially do because there's still a schedule favor that is helping the Tigers, namely their series. Oh, it's on the road. Both of the easy ones, in theory anyway, are on the road. One of them starts tonight, so they get the Twins again. Then you get a Royals team over the weekend, and then it's that four-game set with the Indians, and then you close at the Braves. So sandwiched between Royals and Indians, you have on the outer edges Atlanta, Minnesota, so that in theory should help a little bit. And I'm very interested to see what happens. Jordan Zimmerman's going to pitch another simulated game. If you're able to get him back and he's effective in any way, that just helps your rotation.
Yeah, the Tigers are in the opposite, you know, boat of the Indians right now. The Indians keep losing starters, and the Tigers are potentially on the verge of getting one back, as opposed to Salazar and Carrasco,
right,
for example. But I mean, I'm interested, though. We talk about the two teams on top in the wild card standings coming from the East, but you never mention the Seattle Mariners. You never mention the Houston Astros. Both of them are a half game behind the Tigers. This is anybody's shooting match here as far as catching Baltimore and or Toronto to make it into the wild card game.
No, and that's very fair to point out. The Astros are still hanging around. Mariners went on a little streak. I think it went to 8 in a row at one point. Just in the last couple days that ended, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
That's
and,
what I thought.
And they've won 7 of their last 10.
There
so
you
that's
go.
That's why, like I said, they're right there with Houston. Both of them 3 back of the second wild card spot, actually from both wild card spots, because the Jays and the Orioles are identical. 82-68.
You know, in some way, this AL wild card is a lot more of a mess than the straightforward division races for the most part, and the NL and everything there. Because here's an interesting thing. You know, Tigers and Indians had their last off day yesterday, right? So they have 13 left each as we go down the stretch, and both of them line up in three game, a four game, and a three game. That's how their series line up. So with that few games left, you know, you're talking the Astros and the Mariners. Do we still count the Yankees as somewhere in there?
No.
I mean, this is a team that's sold.
No.
Played better. They're only 4.5 out.
Yeah, but no, they haven't played better. They've fallen apart. They've lost 7 of their last 10 and 5 in a row.
That is true.
They've killed themselves. I mean, I would have included them a week and a half ago.
Yes.
But not now. They're 4.5 back and, you know, just in the wild card. And again, the way they're playing, 5 straight losses, 3-7. This is the kind of time where I bet they're kicking themselves and wondering about should we have done it with Andrew Miller or not. Losing him, but
I hope they're not doing that. Actually, what they did is actually for the betterment of the Yankees.
What, say again?
I hope they're not kicking themselves in this regard. What they did is still for the actual betterment of the Yankees longer term, quite frankly.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about short term. I mean, they went ahead and traded for a lot of prospects, Chapman and Miller, and this is what you get. You know, you're in crunch time right now, and you don't have the horses you need at a number of different places. But yeah,
so basically, if I may ask, Bob, your line when you look at the giant mess that still is the AL wildcard standings, your line of in it, not in it, is between the Yankees and the Mariners.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I can live with that.
And Mariners/Astros, because they're identical also.
Right. Yeah, good call. It's true.
Yeah, because the Mariners are Astros are both 79-71, 3 games out. The Tigers one game better at 79-70, actually half game better, beg your pardon, at 2.5. So to me, that's where the drop-off is. So you got 5 teams for those 2 spots. You know, the Jays, the Orioles, the Tigers, the Astros, and the Mariners. And it's interesting, you know, only one of them is from the American League Central, 2 from the North, 2 from the West, or the East and the West, I should say. And that's fine. I have no problem with that. I really feel very strangely, no, I won't say confident. I feel like the Tigers have a real opportunity. I won't say confident that they're going to seize it, but I feel like they have a real opportunity to be one of those 2 final teams standing. I know they're 2.5 back, so that means, you know, the Jays and the Orioles are going to have to dump something somewhere. They're going to have to fall, and the Tigers are going to have to take advantage. But I feel like it when you look at what they have in 4 or 6 of their last 13 games, it's Minnesota and Atlanta. And they ought to be able to win, I would imagine, 5 of those, which brings it down to the 7 that they have left with the Indians and the Kansas City Royals. And again, the Royals, I think, kind of had their run, and they're not, you know, a factor any longer. But they had their little run there in the early part of September, late August, and early September, and they're not really anything to be worried about either. And if you look at pitching matchups in those particular games as well, the first one ought to be a doozy, actually, with Fulmer and Duffy. And I'm skipping over the Minnesota series for the moment. And then Norris, Ventura, and Boyd, and Volquez, absolutely winnable games there. And now the Indians are a different story because the Indians, you know, have owned them. They've only lost twice all season long to them. But this isn't the Indians of, you know, the best starting rotation in baseball. It's Kluber, Clevinger, Bauer, and Anderson going for the Indians in those 4. Which means, you know, at least a couple of those are very winnable. So I'm just looking at schedules. If the Tigers are able to do what they should do, and that's beat up on weak teams like Minnesota and Atlanta, and hold their own and play halfway baseball, maybe roughly .500 or win 1 more you know, take two out of three from KC and two out of four at least from Cleveland. I don't see any reason why they can't get there, Jim.
No, I can agree with that. I really do. And if schedules mean anything, and I think sometimes in baseball they may mean a little bit less, not just because of the series, but how things shake out, you know, in terms of how wins and losses end up getting divided up. But if schedules down these last 2 weeks mean anything, I just kind of mentioned the Tigers. Here are the other, essentially, the four with the Tigers in that wild card. Baltimore, they started a series yesterday. They have three more with Boston. Then they host Arizona. They finished last week on the road at Toronto for three, at the Yankees for three. That's Baltimore. Toronto, they had one yesterday and one at Seattle. Got two more of those. Off day for travel back. Yankees, Orioles, three each in Canada, and at Boston for four to end the season. Mm-hmm. Houston got two more out in Oakland, divisional opponent for them. Then back home for the Angels for four, Mariners three, at L.A. for three more. Seattle has those other two at Toronto, and as mentioned, Toronto won last night. Then they go to Minnesota for three, go to Houston for three, finish with Oakland. And the bottom of that West with L.A. and Oakland, they're pretty bad.
Yeah, I got to tell you, based on everything that you just laid out, I think the Astros...
It's those seven games with the Angels.
What's that?
It's those seven games and plus two more with the Angels and Astros is what I'm looking at there, too.
No, I'm talking about the Astros.
Right, that's what I mean. They have seven total with the Angels and two more with the A's.
Yeah, they've got seven with the Angels, who are awful. They got two more with the A's, and then they've got Seattle, which, of course, you're fighting, one of the teams you're fighting for the wild card with. I think they've got a really, really great opportunity here. And they come in, play, you know, into this stretch, down the stretch, playing well. They've won four of their last five because they beat Texas, then won the first two against Seattle before dropping the series finale there on Sunday, and then yesterday over the A's in game one there. So I got to tell you, the Astros are sitting in a place right now where they can, obviously you could say any of these teams control their own destiny in large part, but they're three back. If they take care of their business, based on what you just described, you know, the Orioles and the Blue Jays are going to beat up on each other, and then they still have to deal with the Yankees and the Red Sox both. And the Red Sox, of course, are the division leaders there.
Right.
I mean, just looking at this, I think the Astros have a pretty good shot, and I already outlined why I think the Tigers do. Here I am staring at the American League East. The two top teams in the wild card race right now are the American League East. And I'm looking at it like, you know, the Astros and the Tigers might have as good a shot as they do of winning this thing. The Blue Jays and the Orioles have tougher roads.
Yeah, the only thing right now going, and I was just about to say something to that effect, and, you know, the only thing going in the Orioles and the Blue Jays' favor right now is they're the two leaders with a 2.5-game cushion, because, twistedly, I think out of these, exclude the Tigers for a minute, out of those other four, I think Toronto is the best overall built, but they have blatantly the toughest schedule of the remaining four.
Indeed.
And Baltimore, outside of Arizona, is not much easier. And as you mentioned, both will play each other three games. That's in Toronto next week. But their biggest thing to their benefit, Bob, is the fact that they're the ones with the 2.5-game lead. Houston has to take care of business with that easy schedule and then still hope the Red Sox and the Yankees and such help them out.
Yeah, that is exactly right, and I think it's going to be very, very fun down the stretch. And Brad Ausmus is, of course, you know, not sugarcoating this at all. He just said, this is on us, we have to win. And obviously, just like all the other teams I mentioned, including Houston and Seattle, they have to count on some other teams to lose. But you know what? The opportunity is there for those things to happen. It's a tougher road, and I think it's going to be an awful lot of fun over the next 14 days or so before the wild card game actually gets set.
And that's good that at least one of the races, the various races out there, whether you're talking division or wild card, does have a little bit of theory excitement. There's only a couple teams for the National League, and it's really one of those three for two spots, basically. I'm not counting the Pirates and the Marlins anymore over there, and all three of those divisions feel like they're wrapped up. And in the AL, the only division that's not fully wrapped up is, you feel anyway, it would be the East, but I think Boston is in clear advantage position in this particular case. And despite our you and I's misgivings about what might happen, Indians playoff, I, for the first time, can feel real confident saying the division race is over.
Oh, I said that Saturday.
And we said this at the end of last week, that anything less than two out of three, four the Tigers, and it's probably game over.
Yeah, they had to beat the Indians at least two out of three there, and then three out of four down the stretch in the second to last series, which, again, as we added up, is 5-2, and then you would still need some help anyway. As soon as they lost the series to the Indians when they lost game number two on Saturday, I said, that's it now. And the Indians' magic number is 7, and it's going to be, I think it's going to go down very, very quickly. That's over. I think all of the attention Detroit is paying right now should be to the wild card. Now, the problem for the Tigers is they don't hit this stretch with any more momentum than any of the other teams do that they're chasing or that they're in this race with. And what I mean by that is, you know, you look at Baltimore, they have won 6 out of their last 10, so basically 500 baseball. You look at Houston, they are 500, 5-5 in their last 10. You look at Toronto, they're 5-5 in their last 10. The only team that's really playing with any momentum now, as we mentioned, was the Mariners, who had won 8 in a row and have won 7 of their last 10. But here are the Tigers. And again, we talk about trying to give them an opportunity to chase, and make up some ground here in this, you know, in this week. And they're 4-8 in their last 12. The Tigers have an opportunity, yes, but they are not exactly hitting their stride, if you will, at the time when they kind of need to. They beat, and this is again recapped by the Detroit News. They beat Chris Sale and the White Sox September 5 on that dramatic 3-run home run by Upton in the 11th.
Right, yeah, yeah.
At that point, they were 4.5 games behind the Indians, and we, you and I, and people who are Indians fans were like, oh boy, here we go. And they owned a share of the wild card, the second wild card spot. Since that time on September 5, they've gone 4-8. They lost that series to the White Sox. They lost the home series to the Orioles. And then they split with the Twins, a team that they need to dominate. And then, of course, they just lost 2 of 3 to the Indians. So they don't really, you know, they don't really come into this final 2-week stretch, you know, with 5 teams fighting for 2 spots, exactly, you know, playing with their hair on fire. They're not playing with a sense of urgency that says, you know, we are in this thing. I believe they are in it. I think the division race is over, but I think they absolutely can come back from 2.5 down. I think Baltimore or Toronto is very easily catchable. One of them is going to, you know, beat the other one, and depending on the rest of their Eastern division schedules, which you kind of laid out there, Jim, somebody is going to fall under 500 in this stretch, and all Tigers need to do is play 2 or 3 games over 500 to catch them and then pass them.
Yeah.
And I think, again, schedule-wise, they have an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and out of those two East teams, you know, it's actually – I'm thinking about it. I would have said a few minutes ago before I really started looking at all these numbers and such, I would have said it would be Baltimore who would be more likely to fall off. The pitching is what it is. Toronto has that experience. It's a lot of that same team that went to the ALCS a year ago. The schedule of Toronto, though, is why I'm now scratching my head as to which one I would pick in terms of, but I still lean to Baltimore in terms of the one team. Their advantages, they got that they have 3 more against Arizona, who's had an awful year this year.
That certainly helps.
But I still lean that way, but it's really interesting to see which one of the two AL East teams would fall off, because that door still has to be open no matter what the Tigers, Astros, and Mariners can do, because it's still 2.5 as of this moment. That's a couple days at least.
Yeah, I think that's a fair analysis. The reason I would lean, if I had to pick one of them to hang on, I would actually lean to Toronto more so. And the reason why is, what wins baseball in October, and we'll just kind of call this an extension of October, what wins baseball games, what wins divisions, and what wins championships. And the Blue Jays have the second best team ERA in the American League, right behind only the Indians. Toronto's pitching, I think, can still keep them alive, and I think they'll be more likely in clutch games down the stretch, including the 3 that they'll have against Baltimore, and I don't remember, I don't have them all memorized, the rest of their schedules. But I think Toronto might be positioned a little bit better, and that Baltimore might be more catchable. They're both catchable, don't get me wrong, but I think that pitching-wise, that is something that, you know, it's the reason why those of us who picked the Indians to win the division and to perhaps make some noise in the playoffs, the reason why is with that 5-man rotation that no longer exists. So I think you got to look at the starters and look at the bullpen of the Blue Jays and give them the same credit and the same, you know, benefit of the doubt that if somebody is to take over here, it could very well be the Toronto Blue Jays.
I can see that, because, and I'm leaning towards that experience and that more balanced type of team. I mean, we all know the Baltimore Orioles' glaring weakness is top-notch starting pitching. They have a great back end of the bullpen, and that team can mash it, but their rotation is still not very good. By the way, speaking of rotations and keeping it into the playoffs, I don't know if you caught this one earlier. I caught it in passing, and I'm giving little golf claps to it already because I've been saying this, Bob, ever since Saturday. It looks like the Indians may be entertaining the idea of a three-man rotation, at least for the division series. And quite frankly, with how the injuries have gone down, I think that needs to happen. Rest, not on your normal rest and regimen, be damned in the playoffs if you want to survive in advance.
I guess, but it depends on who those three arms are. If they belong to Kluber, Bauer, and Tomlin, it doesn't make me any feel any better than if it were Kluber, Bauer, Tomlin, and Clevinger. I mean, other than you get Kluber out there one more time a little bit more quickly. But I mean, honestly, I am caught right now in such a weird place. I'm excited about the fact that the Indians could win their eighth division championship in the last 21 years. That's a great thing. They're going into the playoffs. They'd automatically be, you know, not a wild card.
And yes, it's a full playoff year this year. Even if it is a first round exit, you get more than one game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm very excited about that, but I was so much more excited 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, right before Salazar.
Try 4 days ago.
No, I'm talking about Salazar.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I'm talking about Salazar first, because, you know, 4 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, Salazar and Carrasco were there, and it was Kluber, Salazar, Carrasco, or Carrasco probably, then Salazar, and then Bauer. That, to me, was a four-man rotation that you can go into and win, you know, an American League pennant and go to the World Series with. But then when Salazar went down, I was like, okay, well, it's still Kluber and Carrasco. You know, and Carrasco has been just dynamic. It's still Kluber and Carrasco, you know, and Bauer might be serviceable there at the number three, and then we got to figure out what to do about the four. We had this conversation, but then when Carrasco goes down 4 days ago, as you point out, now it's, you know, Trevor Bauer's your number two. And Trevor Bauer on one given night might be Cy Young. And on the next given night, he might be, you know, I don't know.
The guy who gave up 6 runs, 10 hits, and plunked three guys the other day?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I don't know. Even if they do go with the three-man rotation, it's the three men that don't make me. I feel so at odds with myself.
This is, to me, actually could turn into.
I feel like, honestly, you know, they should be going into the playoffs with a great chance to win in the playoffs, and now I feel like they're just going in there until their pitching staff blows up and it's a
Here's an extra twist to it that's actually that just popped into my head, and it's already making me start to have to think about this again. Remember last week we had what I think is an interesting Tigers version of this debate of how do you line up for last day of the season and then that wild card game, you know, that whole thing, Fulmer, Verlander. You could ask the same one going down these last couple of weeks, and the Indians obviously, by going straight to the division series, they'll have the day's rest needed to, you know, reset the rotation without any, you know, extra issues like you could happen if you go into wild card game. Remember the wild card game a couple years ago for the Indians, they had to start Salazar because they used Ubaldo and whatnot the day before, so they couldn't do it. Here's the interesting debate. If you think about it, yeah, not only if you go a three-man rotation, I think it's pretty clear the question would be who would be the third guy, a Tomlin or Clevinger. But that means it's Kluber 1-4 and Trevor Bauer, as you just mentioned, deciding game five.
Yeah.
Whereas the reverse question is, if you go with four, okay, you're throwing both Tomlin and Clevinger out there, but if you need that game five, that'd be Kluber.
Yeah, Kluber, but you got to win, you know, 3 and 4.
Right. So what do you do there? That to me is actually trickier than the Verlander Fulmer wildcard game question, honestly.
Hey,
because there's pros and cons on either side of that.
By the way, I want to throw this out, too. You know, as we get toward the end of the baseball season, and we're talking about all of these possible playoff scenarios and, you know, Tigers chasing the wild card and so on and so forth, it's also time to start thinking about who the award winners are going to be.
Mm.
And some of these may be decided down the stretch. You know, Rick Porcello, by the way, has two more wins than second place J.A. Happ, but four more than Corey Kluber. Corey Kluber's not going to win the Cy Young. Not with that many. And Porcello's ERA is just, I mean, almost identical to Kluber's at 3.08 and Kluber at 3.12. But I was looking at that for the purposes of awards. But what I noticed as I was kind of scanning the stat sheets earlier today and the league leaders was how much more dominant the pitching is in the National League. And oftentimes you can say the pitching, it's easier to pitch in the National League because you only have,
practical purposes, you're going against an eight-man lineup.
That's what I'm saying, because you don't have the designated hitter. You get to pitch to the other pitcher, et cetera, et cetera. But it still shouldn't explain why it is that there is only one pitcher in the American League with an ERA of under three. It's Masahiro Tanaka. Tanaka has a 2.97, just barely under three. There are nine National League starters with ERAs under three. Nine. Think about that for a moment. Kyle Hendricks of the Cubs has a 2.06 ERA in 28 starts. 2.06.
Almost John a full Lester, run lower than Tanaka.
Exactly. John Lester, also the Cubs, 2.40. Madison Bumgarner, who's about to enter his favorite time of the year in October, is a 2.57. Noah Syndergaard of the Mets, 2.63. Tanner Roark of the Nats, 2.75. Max Scherzer of the Nats, trying to earn that money, 17-7 on the year, 2.78. Johnny Cueto of the Giants, 2.86. Jake Arrieta of the Cubs, 2.96. Remember, he was all but untouchable.
Right.
Before. He's still very, very good at 2.96 and a 17-7 record. And then, Jose Fernandez of Miami with a 2.99. You've got nine guys with ERAs under three. And in the American League, you got one guy. One guy, and that's barely at 2.97, in Masahiro Tanaka. Is the pitching just that much better in the National League? I cannot account for that much of a difference in dominant statistical performance. I cannot account for that just by saying, well, it's an eight-man lineup that they have to face.
Yeah.
It's more than that.
You know, and it shouldn't be a full run. You know, I could totally write it off to the whole pitcher batting and all that stuff if we're talking a quarter run or a half a run difference, but nearly a full run between the two leaders, not to mention the part where it's nine in the NL, only one in the AL.
Basically, the other way to look at it is the league leader in the American League would be 10th in the National League.
There you go. Okay,
10th in ERA.
No, he would be ninth. 2.97. Fernandez is 2.99.
Oh, that's right, 2.99 and 2.97. Okay, well, bully for that. But you understand
close
the
enough.
Point.
Yeah, close just enough. Incidentally, for humor value, you know who's 10th in the NL and he does have an ERA over three? Is Bartolo Colon.
Wow.
Seeing his name pop up just makes me laugh and smile every time. I love it.
I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. Good for big, beefy Bartolo.
I mean, it shows you how long, to me, the way I view is how long he's been around. I remember watching him, Bob, as a teenager pitching for the Indians.
Oh,
of course.
Yeah,
of course.
I mean, I'll tell you what.
I'm in my mid-30s, so I mean,
looking at his body, he has no business still being in Major League Baseball. And it just goes to show that there is something about the physiology of a pitcher. You know what I mean? Where you either have the shoulder and elbow tendons, ligaments, joints, muscle, et cetera, to do this no matter what happens to the rest of your body for a long time, or you don't. You look at a physically fit specimen like Steven Strasburg in Washington, for example, who's trying to come back again. I saw that, we heard the reporter yesterday, I think it was, you know, Steven Strasburg played catch today. It's like, this dude is constantly, constantly on the DL with one thing or another going wrong, and he stays in perfectly, you know, fit physical condition. And he's probably going to be out of baseball, I would imagine, in 4 or 5 years, based on the way his
injury track is going like this. That's exactly actually a possibility.
And then there's the rotund Bartolo Colon, who never, you know, met a plate of pasta he didn't like based on, looking at his physique. And he just still cranks it and fires it and is still doing his thing at the age of, I don't know, what, 62? You know? I mean, really.
That is so weird, the dynamic, how that works out.
There's a physiology thing that you can't really.
And here's a brain teaser for you, because it kind of goes along in the same vein as a Bartolo Colon. The easiest comparison for anyone who remembers baseball from about 1990 on, at least, David Wells. And I just decided to look him up, just as a curiosity. And outside of 95, which also was partially strike shortened, as we remember at the beginning,
yeah,
the lowest innings pitched output from David Wells from 1990 through 2005 is 1 year he had 100 innings, next lower was 184. Basically, dude was always out there every fifth day.
That's
for
amazing.
15 years looking like David Wells.
That's pretty amazing. And David Wells, by the way, was another example of that. I'm glad you brought him up because I've talked about him before. And it's true. It truly is. Like I said, you know, there's a guy, again, I don't think he does sit-ups when he gets out of bed. He just kind of rolls out and then stands up, let alone doing a sit-up to get from a prone
right?
to a seated position.
It makes no sense for on
no.
a certain level.
No, none whatsoever. You know, Wells went out there with, you know, mustard stains all over his uniform and just all kinds of slop.
That's an urban legend, but it might be true.
And kept doing his thing until, I don't know, deep into his 30s, late 30s as well.
Actually, so early 40s for him.
Early 40s, yeah. And what is Bartolo now, about 43?
42,
okay. Yeah, it's really a fascinating thing. All right, hey, we're going to get a timeout here, but not before I tell you about the Buckeye Store and More, your college and pro superstore. At the Buckeye Store and More, you're going to find everything and anything you can Buckeyes related. If it's scarlet or gray, it's going to be at the Buckeye Store and More. And if it's an item that can become scarlet or gray or be painted with a block O in some fashion on it and a Buckeye leaf, you're going to find it at the Buckeye Store and More. Whether it's clothing, whether it's decor for your home or for your man cave, whether it's something for an accessory for your automobile, just about everything you can think of that would be adorned in Buckeye colors is there at the Buckeye Store and More. And you know what else? With hundreds of new products coming in each and every day, the largest store in Ohio dedicated to the Buckeye gear gets even better. 10% store-wide savings right now on every single item in the store, from small to large. You find it. It's 10% off. And if you get there early enough, Doorbuster items available at 50 to 75% off each and every day. That's at the Buckeye Store and More. But it's not all Buckeyes. That's the more part. Michigan, Notre Dame, Michigan State, Toledo, Bowling Green, and the Detroit Tigers, all fan zones are there for your teams as well. So get to the Buckeye Store and More in Sylvania. It's at 5700 Monroe in Starlight Plaza, right between Ralphie's and Dave's in front of Prometica. Just look for Big Brutus on the Roof at the Buckeye Store and More, the college and pro superstore in Sylvania.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Indeed, that sounds like us all over right here on Toledo Sports Leader. Phone lines open, 866-240-1065. You got something to say, call us up and say it. Argue with us, disagree with us, tell us you're in total agreement with us. I don't care. Tell us what your thoughts are. We'll put you up and on the radio. Coming up at about 4:05. So after the top of the hour Sports Center, we're going to talk Lions football. Chris Lemieux from PrideOfDetroit.com is going to join us to break down the loss the Lions suffered to those Tennessee Titans on a last-minute scoring drive by Marcus Mariota, engineered by Marcus Mariota. So we'll talk a little Lions with him. Then at about 4:35, 4:40, we're going to talk a little bit of college football with Mike Jinks, head coach of the Bowling Green State Falcons. Bowling Green fell to 1-2 with a big loss. Bad loss, maybe is what I should say. 41-21, they drop the game on Saturday to Middle Tennessee State. So we'll talk to Coach Jinks coming up here at about around 4:40 or so. Hey, Jim, before we do anything else, before I get back to football, and I do want to talk, about the NFL power rankings. ESPN has their power rankings out now after week number 2, and we'll get people's thoughts on that and yours. But I want to go back to something I brought up very briefly yesterday baseball-wise. We just kind of talked at great length in the first half hour about the Tigers' chances of winning the wild card,
right,
or winning one of the two wild card spots, and going into the postseason. And we also talked a little bit about how the Indians might have a real, real difficult time winning in the playoffs due to their injury situation. This is something we brought up yesterday, and I was trying to remember the stats, but I couldn't. So I went ahead and found them before today's show. The difference that it makes when you don't have your regular catcher working behind the dish. Yan Gomes, as we know, went down with a pretty serious injury. He has missed a good, I don't even know exactly how many games he's missed this year, but he's missed a ton of games. And even when he was playing, as we know, it's just been an awful year at the plate for Yan Gomes. He hit 21 home runs and was a Silver Slugger Award winner in 2014. But this year he was just below the Mendoza line and just unable to get a hit. It was just a pretty painful thing to see. So when he went down, And for the most recent time, and for those who don't know, he's been down, he's knocked down even further now because he was on his rehab assignment in Double A Akron back, what was it, Jim?
I think it's Thursday.
And he got hit by a pitch and now has a broken hand. So, you know, as if, you know, it couldn't get any worse, it certainly can. Even without his bat, though, this is the importance that a Yan Gomes has to an Indians team trying to not only make it to the playoffs, obviously down the stretch here, but to win in the playoffs, assuming they get to that magic number of 7, okay? Before Gomes got hurt, the Indians had a 5.93 winning percentage and a team ERA of 3.57. Since he's been out of the lineup and on the DL, the team's winning percentage has dropped to 5.53, so 40 points, and their ERA has climbed to 4.23, about three quarters of a run difference. To be specific, with the exception of Corey Kluber, who's been terrific all year, the other four starting pitchers have seen their own pitching numbers decline significantly and dramatically without Yan Gomes calling the game behind the plate. For example, Carlos Carrasco, before, of course, he went down with his own broken hand, fractured hand, ending his season as of, what was it?
That was second pitch Saturday afternoon.
Saturday afternoon, thank you. Carlos Carrasco, before Gomes got injured, was 6-3 with a 2.49. Since Gomes went down, 5-5 with a 4.32. And you might think, well, that's, how do you attribute that to the catcher? That's one guy. Okay. Trevor Bauer, before Gomes went down, 7-3 with a 3.27. Since Gomes went to the DL, 4-4, 5.23. You say, oh, still, that's just a coincidence, right? Okay. Danny Salazar, before Gomes got injured, 10-3, 2.75. Since Gomes went down, Salazar went 1-3, 7.44. And finally, Josh Tomlin. Before Gomes got injured, 10-2 with a 3.34. Since Gomes went down, 2-6 with an 8.08. Danny Salazar was headed for a 20-win year, a 200-strikeout year, a sub-3 ERA year, and possibly Cy Young Award year before his arm flared up. In his last 45 starts prior to that, he was 24-13 with a 3.04. And Carrasco was the number two starter behind Kluber. I'm just pointing out, if one starter saw his numbers go, you know, take such a huge dramatic change, and when I say down, of course, I mean down in performance, but up in terms of ERA. If one starter had that happen, you might just say, well, you know, it is what it is. He just went into a slump. If two starters do, you say, well, that's a weird coincidence, but it is what it is. They went into slumps. If three starters, four starters have the same kind of dramatic drop-off in performance after the starting catcher goes down? I'm sorry. It means something. Yan Gomes' absence from this team is going to cost that team greatly as they get into the postseason, if indeed they're able to hold off the Tigers, and I believe they will. We've all kind of said the division is over. But, you know, it matters. And no disrespect to Chris Jimenez, no disrespect to Hernandez or anybody else who's back there. Guess what? You know, Yan Gomes needs to be behind the plate. And the fact that he will not be is having a dramatic impact on these guys' performances, Jim.
Yeah, and that's so interesting because sometimes that, you know, gets overlooked. But then again, we wonder why at times teams will trot out catchers batting 200 because maybe he's pretty good with the pitching staff and could throw the occasional guy out stealing second, which Yan Gomes, incidentally, also very good at, by the way. And you know, you sometimes forget those things. And yes, for Salazar, there were arm issues there. But outside of that, yeah, I can even throw out Salazar. Just think Bauer and Carrasco, for example, who have been relatively healthy. Just going with those two, yes. Been relatively healthy at least since Gomes' injury. Obviously, Carrasco had his thing for about, the month earlier in the year. But outside
about,
of that.
About almost 6 weeks, actually.
Right, yeah. So a month and a half. Outside of that, though, they've been mostly healthy, at least the two of them. And as you point out, their numbers are just noticeably worse.
Yeah, and again, I would still, even though you have to certainly take into consideration the health factor, and you're right about that, I would say that it impacts pretty much everybody not named Corey Kluber. Kluber has been dynamic from day one. I mean, he's had a couple of moments, you know, here and there where he had a bad start and got knocked around, but I mean, there's a reason why. He's third in the American League in wins, and he's around fourth, I believe, in ERA. He's right up there among the top two or three in strikeouts. In fact, let me see if I have that. Where is he in strikeouts? He is number, actually number four in strikeouts. Number four in strikeouts going at least into today. So he's having a monster season no matter what, but all of the other guys being impacted by this, I think we really need to kind of consider that when we start picking who we think is going to win in the American League playoffs. All right, 866-240-1065. Real quick before the top of the hour, I want to kind of set this up because we're going to get back into the NFL with our friend Chris Lemieux from PrideOfDetroit.com, and he's going to break down the Lions loss on Sunday to the Tennessee Titans. But I just wanted to throw this out there as far as the NFL's power rankings. First of all, where do you think the Cleveland Browns after 2 weeks of football? Christian, where do you think they're going to be?
I'm pretty doggone sure they're going to be at the bottom. And if not, whoever's writing these power rankings needs to be fired.
Dead freaking last in the ESPN power rankings released earlier today. 0-2. They were dead last week after Robert Griffin went down. Now they're dead last again after Josh McCown goes down. Guess where they're going to be next week after Cody Kessler, I won't say goes down, but takes the field. Yeah, it is exactly as bad, if not worse, than almost everybody predicted it would be. But what about the 1-1 Detroit Tigers? How do you think they fare in the ESPN power rankings, Jim?
I would say the Lions are probably
top half or bottom half.
I'm going to lean towards top half.
So you would have them at 16 or higher, 15 or higher.
Yeah, there's a lot of 1-1 teams. It's a matter of how you put them. So I would think they might be in the top.
No, they are number 20.
Really?
Number 20. And that's up two spots despite the loss from last week's number 22, believe it or not. The Lions could be 2-0 had they held the lead against Tennessee in week 2. This is just the commentary on power rankings, but they could also be 0-2 had they failed to come back against Indy in week 1. They've allowed a go-ahead score in the final 90 seconds of each game so far this season and face a team in week 3 that beat them on a Hail Mary in 2015. So the Lions are down there at number 20. Here are your top 10 in reverse chronological order, just to kind of throw it out, because I'd love to debate this a little bit with Chris Lemieux and then a little bit next hour. The 1-1 Seattle Seahawks are 10th, according to the ESPN Power Rankings. The 1-1 Green Bay Packers are 9th. I think they are rated too high. Aaron Rodgers was not good on Sunday night in prime time. He was outplayed by Sam Bleeping Bradford, who has had the Rams playbook for how long? Or not Bradford, I beg your pardon. By Bradford.
You're thinking Vikings, not Rams.
Yes, I am. I am. The Vikings. Had the Vikings playbook for what? All of a week and a half? 2 weeks, maybe? Something like that?
Yeah.
Got outplayed by Sam Bradford. Yeah, the Seahawks, of course, got outplayed by the new look Los Angeles Rams. Old look, by the way, uniform wise, which I love.
Who are 1-1 and have yet to score a touchdown, if I'm not mistaken.
Which is impossible.
Feels impossible, doesn't it?
But there it is. Yeah, because they were shut out in week 1 by the Niners, and then they went 9-3 on field goals. So you're exactly right. The 1-1 Bengals are number 8 in power rankings. Number 7. Minnesota Vikings at 2-0, and I'll tell you what, I think that's a phenomenal story right there, and I'm really kind of pulling for the Vikings. I like Mike Zimmer. I don't really like Sam Bradford, but I don't dislike him. I think it's a great story.
His problem is he's never been able to be healthy enough for you to really get a real good like or dislike of the guy, honestly.
The problem for them is, Adrian Peterson is supposed to be the threat, which takes the pressure off of Sam Bradford, so Bradford doesn't have to carry the team by throwing it 40 times a game. Peterson is down now with a torn meniscus in his knee. Not sure if he's going to play this week or not. He's questionable at the moment. If he can't go, it becomes a lot tougher for Minnesota. Number 6, the 2-0 Houston Texans. Number 5, the defending champion Broncos. Number 4, the Carolina Panthers, the defending NFC champions. They're 1-1 and ranked ahead of some 2-0 teams like the Broncos. I might have a problem with that. We'll talk. Number 3, the 1-1 Arizona Cardinals. Same exact story. Top-ranked team according to the NFL Football Power Index, but some turnovers and other problems have them not actually at number 1, but number 3. Number 2, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are 2-0 and missing some prime offensive players. And then number 1, minus Tom Brady, It is the New England Patriots. Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, this may not last because Jimmy Garoppolo, the number two, is down, and now they are turning to rookie Jacoby Brissett, who is going to try to run the offense in Garoppolo's absence, at least for 2 weeks before Tom Brady comes back. So those are your power rankings right now, according to ESPN.com. And we'll talk about that and debate whether or not you think it's right for some of these 1-1 teams to be ranked over good quality 2-0 teams. I got a bit of a problem with those. Those, unlike college football's rankings, however, are just for fun, and I'm okay with that. College football's rankings are taken into consideration by BCS almost every time, Jim.
We got so used to it after all those years.
Yeah. CFP, College Football Committee members, can take those rankings into consideration when they decide who's going to be in the postseason. That matters a lot more. These are just for fun and for sports talk and for blogs and for social media, and we're going to use it for exactly that. And by the way, is before we take this time out here at the top of the hour, speaking of the NFL, you can't really enjoy it without enjoying it the fantasy football way. And I'm talking about the FanDuel fantasy football way, calling on all fantasy fans, put your skills to the test and give yourself a chance to win cash on FanDuel. It's 1 week fantasy football at its finest. Just choose a contest you want to enter, pick a team, and win. Contests are there for beginners if you want, or you can get into bigger tournaments for more experienced players. You can play for as little as a buck, and setting up a lineup is easy. So it's there for anybody's budget, no matter who you are. Cash prizes paid out every single week. And this week, don't miss FanDuel's Sunday Million Tournament, paying out at least $1 million in prizes. So if you are looking, by the way, what are you going to do with Sam Bradford? I'm actually looking at him without Adrian Peterson. I'm probably not going to look as long as I would have otherwise. But he outplayed Aaron Rodgers in prime time. So if you're looking for a backup quarterback, perhaps, obviously the way the Vikings were when Teddy Bridgewater went down, they turned to Sam Bradford. Maybe you should, too, in your lineup. But the beauty is you get to change your lineup each and every week at FanDuel.com. If you think you know fantasy football, prove it. Try FanDuel now and get up to $50 in free entries. New users who deposit will get 5 free entries to the NFL 50-50 beginner contest valued at up to $50. You'll get 1 free entry a week for 5 straight weeks. The value of entries, of course, is based on your deposited amount. Go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button. Just because the season's 2 weeks old means nothing. At FanDuel, you didn't have to draft 2 weeks before they started. You can redraft each and every week. At FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button and use my promo code FRANTZ, F-R-A-N-T-Z. That's FanDuel, F-A-N-D-U-E-L.com. Promo code FRANTZ, F-R-A-N-T-Z. It's void where prohibited. Join me in getting sports rich at FanDuel.com. Hour number two coming right up on the ticket.
FRANTZ Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza. Thanks for being with us this afternoon right here on The Ticket. A little NFL football style now as we move into hour number two. We welcome Chris Lemieux back to our program. He is one of the great writers and contributors to PrideOfDetroit.com. Let's talk a little Lions football this afternoon. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Lions football. I'm doing pretty good. It's week of my birthday, so I'm not really feeling it this week. I'm feeling like I'm about to turn 30, and I don't like it.
Oh my! I remember those days. I remember being a big whiner about it too. You know, back when I turned 30, there was a show on TV called 30 Something. You ever hear of it?
I've heard of 30 Rock.
Nope. 30-something. It was called 30-something. That was the name.
Yeah, no.
I wasn't at a loss for the word there. I didn't say 30-something. It was called 30-something.
No, I know. I was trying to make a joke.
Oh, okay, okay. You did it.
My age, my jokes are getting dated, too.
Well, given your age, I kind of thought that you didn't know about the show 30-something because it was from the 90s, I guess. There was a show called 30-something, and it featured, you know, a bunch of 30-somethings, and they all seemed to have life by the you-know-whats. They all had two Volvos in the garage and were living happy and healthy and living upper middle class, and all they did was whine and complain. And when I was 29 and turning 30, I thought, oh, my God, am I about to enter that terrible period of time like they're all whining about? They got it so bad. And then, of course, 40 came, and now 50 is approaching with vigor, and I'm wishing I was back and whining about turning 30-something again. So enjoy it while you have it, my friend. Youth is fleeting, I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, I read a lot of this British guy, Sam Chris. His blog is very funny. He's kind of a intellectual/anti-intellectual. He does a lot of funny things about but also a lot of insightful things. And he's been infecting me lately because his view of the world is very bleak. And, you get a lot of reasons to be so. But I guess this is a great tie-in to talking about Lions football.
Well, yeah, I suppose it is. If you're talking about feeling miserable, you can do that very easily. All right, so the Lions, obviously, we'll just get your overall impression about what happened, particularly in the fourth quarter, is the Lions defense again gives up a game-winning drive with less than 90 seconds to play. They give up a ton of points, 30 points now in the fourth quarter in two games that they've allowed. Marcus Mariota pretty much dominates, going 10 for 12 in two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. The game was there for the taking, and they just don't know how to finish. Is that the result of I can't really call them an incredibly young team, but is it the results of some inexperience at key positions, or is it a Coach Caldwell thing? Is it a defensive coordinator thing? What do you think?
At this point, I really don't know. This is the problem of it only being two games, because it's just the sample size is so abysmally small. But yeah, you do see a lot of points given up in the fourth quarter. There's really no two ways about it. But you just kind of wonder what it is, too. And I know the Titans, like, they adjusted. They, for the most of the day, was a run-first offense. Like, you know, they wanted to lean on DeMarco Murray and, to a lesser extent, Derrick Henry, who, by the way, I was surprised that they didn't give Derrick Henry more touches, because every time Derrick Henry, you know, Heisman winner out of Alabama, every time he touched the ball, it looked like it took three tacklers to take that monster down. But thankfully, they kept it with DeMarco Murray. But you know, when they were down, what happens is they go to the air. And who do the Titans have as their number one threat through the air? It's Delanie Walker. What's Delanie Walker good at? What tight ends are good at? Mid to short range passing.
That's
what
right.
Are the Lions bad at a defense? Mid to short range passing. And the injuries just made it worse. You know, first off, in stopping the run, you had Ezekiel Ansah go down very early in that game. We still don't know what's wrong with him. And if he misses time, man, you at least have depth on the defensive line. You at least have depth to replace him. Where you don't have depth right now is in the linebackers, where, what was it, Kyle Van Noy got hurt. DeAndre Levy was already a scratch. He might be hurt. I don't know. And then Antoine Williams, the rookie, gets hurt. Like, you're playing with Thurston Armbrister, who is like literally his first snaps with the team. He looks really lost out there. So, yeah, it wasn't a position the Lions were in that allowed them to really hunker down on defense to really get any stops. Like, just the whole thing, the whole experiment just kind of really fell apart near the end.
We're talking to Chris Lemieux of PrideDetroit.com, talking Lions football. Lions now 1-1 after the loss to Tennessee, a very, very winnable game. But then again, they beat Indianapolis in week one, which was a very, very losable game as well. So you kind of take it, depends on whether you look at glass.
And I don't want to press too much on the penalties. I think it's a rote thing. I think the game was called right, even though I hate that. I think we've talked about this way before in the offseason, how much I hate the amount of penalties, how it stifles, the ebb and flow of the game, which I think is doubly so if you're a up-tempo team like the Lions are trying to be this year on offense. But the one call I will quibble with was the one that filched a touchdown from Eric Ebron in the end zone, you know. OPI on him when he just put his hand on him. He wasn't pushing off or anything. And then all of a sudden you get thrown into, you get another three touchdowns were taken off the board by penalties here.
When you look at the magnitude of the penalties, Chris, and we talked about this some yesterday, the magnitude of the penalties when three of them take away touchdowns, but then just also the massive quantity of them. When you have, what was it, 17?
Yeah. 17 for the Lions, 29, I think, for both teams combined. I've got the stats right here. Yeah, that's right.
And the Lions lead the league now in 2 weeks with 30 penalties in 2 weeks. So when you add all of that together and the magnitude, I mean, it's got to play a role. I mean, you know, you say you don't want to get too worked up about it, but I think Jim Caldwell better get worked up about it, because that is now signaling, again, very small sample size, 2 weeks. Right, got it, sure,
right.
Check mark, understood. But it's a really, really disturbing little trend, even through 2 weeks, to be this undisciplined.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm one who doesn't believe in the term undisciplined, really. Like, I don't believe that getting penalties is a failure of discipline. I think we talked about this on our podcast last night. My guy Jeremy, his argument was basically like, these penalties don't stem from a lack of discipline. They basically stem from you're making mistakes. And what happens when you make mistakes, you're taught in football when you make a mistake to overcompensate for it. And that's when you get the flag thrown on you. So yeah, I think that's just, you know, the players making mistakes. Like that's a personal thing. That's not something a coach can really, you know, they can fix that with more practice, but I don't think that's a discipline
thing. But you know, I mean, that's a real, That's a real difficult thing to try to understand, because every team has players that make mistakes. Every player in the league makes mistakes, and they don't always end up getting flagged. And by the way, I was wrong. Not 30 through 2 weeks. 26 through 2 weeks, to be clear.
Still a lot. Yeah.
Still a lot, and still leading the league. But that's still my point then. You know, while it may be, okay, if you want to say tomato and I say tomato, I say undisciplined, you say overcoming mistakes, how come everybody else in the league isn't overcoming mistakes to such a, you know, to such a monumental degree, to the point where it's 26 in 2 weeks and three touchdowns taken off the board in one game?
Well, I think at that point you're saying the Lions are just making more mistakes than anyone, which, I mean, absolutely probably true, especially in these later situations we keep talking about where, I mean, like, yeah, we talked about this all the time, that offensive line is very young, and look what happened on that first and goal I was talking about. You can, that OPI call on Ebron, which shouldn't have happened, but then two holding calls, which absolutely should have been called on the offensive line. And before you know it, you're kicking a 42-yard field goal when we were knocking on the door. It was like I posted that to Twitter, and my friends were trying to figure out that riddle. And the answer to that is Lions football.
There you go. That's very well said. We're talking to Chris Lemieux, who writes for PrideOfDetroit.com. Let's talk about the injury bug now. Abdullah is out, and I guess it's just a foot sprain, so the x-rays were negative. What's the prognosis there? And then who do they miss more if he misses any time? Is it him or is it Ansah?
We had the same question on our podcast, and I think we were legitimately split. We have four guys in our podcast. Two of us said Ansah, and I kind of gave a non-committal answer, and then my friend Ryan said Abdullah, and I'll try to argue from both sides. I think the answer is probably, just given depth, Abdullah. But, I mean, you lose Ansah, you lose a very explosive edge rusher. Devin Taylor's kind of stepped up a little bit, but, I mean, it's been against the Titans and the Colts. God help if, like, he can't do that against some better offensive lines out there. But on the flip side, when it comes to Abdullah, like, I'm just looking at the running back game right now. Zach Zenner has been a healthy scratch for 2 weeks now. Michael Burton's the fullback. So that leaves you, if Abdullah's out, that leaves you with Theo Riddick and Dwayne Washington. And Dwayne Washington looks okay, but he was also a late round draft pick, and he only barely made the team. And Theo Riddick is, I don't know what to make of Theo Riddick's running right now. I don't know what to make of the whole running game, because this running game theoretically shouldn't be. The Lions haven't had their running game working for several years, didn't have it working in the preseason, and all of a sudden, like, you know, Abdullah, okay, I can see some, like, longs coming out of him because he's Abdullah. He's skill on the ground. Theo Riddick, like, he is running more on the ground than he has in his entire professional career. He is supposed to be a primarily receiving tailback, and instead he ran for 37 yards on Sunday, which, again, he had his, like, career long against the Colts, and it's like, I don't know if that can continue. So if Theo Riddick is your number one rushing, you're not going to have a ground game much. Like, and that's going to be a problem without Abdullah, because Abdullah, like Riddick, can also receive, which fits the Lions' offense, but you need a ground game to keep people honest. And if your only options are Riddick and Washington, you're going to be in a tough spot.
I agree with you. From a depth standpoint, it certainly would seem to be Abdullah to be, you know, the more crucial piece to be gone there. Chris, what do you understand as far as time potentially being missed by both these guys? A high ankle sprain is a pretty bad one. That's what Ansah suffers from, so it sounds like he would miss more time than Abdullah with a foot sprain.
Well, this is the fun part of the Detroit Lions. They don't talk about injuries. So we are completely in the dark here. Like, you know, it's basically kind of, it's piecemeal right now. I know, let's see here. I know there's concern over both, but the best I can say is a shrug. I do know Abdullah was in a boot, and I think he's getting a second opinion today or tomorrow in South Carolina, but we really don't have the answers. Like, we had a lot of people asking us after the game and, like, on our podcast, and we just sat there, and it's like, we don't know. We don't know because no one is telling us anything. The only thing you can really rely on are all these former NFL doctors who are now on Twitter, like, watching tape and, like, trying to diagnose from afar because teams are so secretive with their injuries.
Real quick, Chris, before you go, just looking at the broader NFL now, we were kicking around the power rankings, which, of course, is just part of the fun of doing sports radio and, in your case, sports podcasting and blogging at PrideOfDetroit.com. ESPN has the Lions falling from 20 to 22. No, the other way around. I beg your pardon. They went up two spots, right? Even though they had the loss, it's kind of counterintuitive. But yes, they lose to Tennessee. They climb two spots. There's a ton of 1-1 teams. They're in the bottom half of the 32 team league. Is that fair?
Well, I think they're the only power ranking that moved the Lions up. Admittedly, they're not like that's not the highest they've been ranked. They NFL.com and Yahoo Sports both had the Lions ranked 18, which is actually, but everyone else moved them down. So that's kind of a little weird for ESPN. So I think that's more
not
just everyone
that,
else.
Not only
kind
that,
of,
directly following them in the ranking at 21 is the Titans, the team
Titans,
beat.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
just
beat them, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, again, like it's a matter of what do you know about this Lions team and how much of it's fair. I will say this, like Ebron looked legitimately good yesterday, and Golden Tate, you got to figure that those drops isn't going to be a reoccurring problem. You would just hope that gets a little better. And then you just, and Matt Stafford, once again, looking phenomenal and, actually truck sticking Parrish Cox. So I like to think that they get, that helped him get some points. But, I think it's fair. Look,
I'd
if you're
bump
a Lions
him up just
fan,
for that. I agree with that. I would bump him up just for that, for Stafford.
Dude, I think one of the SB Nation writers, like, that was the equivalent of a posterization. Like, he was basically saying Parrish Cox had to retire after that. Of course, Parrish Cox then got the last laugh on Stafford. His interception sealed the game. But look, I look around the NFC North, and I mean, not even the NFC North, the whole NFC. There's only three teams in the NFC that have a 2-0 record right now. Like, if you're the Lions, you're in pretty good company to try to rebound. The only problem is you got Green Bay coming up, and I know Aaron Rodgers looked really bad last night, and we're all kind of, like, worrying about him. We've been worrying about him for months, but, oh, man, it's Aaron Rodgers in a rebound game. Oh, no. Oh, no. I can't feel good about this.
And in Lambeau to boot.
In Lambeau.
Yeah, well, we won in Lambeau. The Lions won in Lambeau last year, which granted, I love how that's been completely forgotten and we're all bringing up the Hail Mary. Like, that's just life as a Lions fan. It's like, hey, we won in Lambeau. It doesn't matter. He got a Hail Mary on you.
Well, I talked about it. That monkey being off their back in Lambeau certainly does matter a little bit. But I agree with you. Aaron Rodgers has not looked good, and I think if he ever wanted to look good, this is the time. And of course, the Lions.
With a banged-up Lions offense, it's a good chance for him to rebound against a banged-up Lions offense. So I'm really not hopping about the Lions' chances. I think they'll have a good chance, but I'm not pinning any money on it. But again, like overall, when you're looking at the season, Lions are still, again, 1-1. A lot of teams else are 1-1. So I think 20 is about fair, and they've got room to grow if they, of course.
So
I think what happened. Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. Go ahead and finish your thought.
I was just saying, like, I think what happens is, like, they're probably going to lose to Green Bay, but then you'll have a pretty good rebound game after that against the Bears, and then you're home for a homestand for, I think, 3-4 games. There's a good chance for the Lions to really turn it around if they can figure out the fourth quarter problems and overcome
three
some
injury in a row,
bugs.
Three in a row against Philly, Los Angeles, and Washington. Very winnable games. No doubt about it at home.
I'm not completely sold on the Eagles just yet, but I think like you can still take 2 out of 3 of those games.
I think so too. Hey, real quick, have you seen the ESPN Power Rankings I just told you about?
Yeah, I've got them up right now. Actually, I'm going through them.
I was going to ask you without looking at theirs who you think your top five teams are after 2 weeks of play.
Okay, I haven't looked at the top five.
Even if you have it in front
I haven't looked at the top five. I haven't looked at the top five, so I can do that.
So rank them 1 through 5. Who has been the most impressive team through 2 weeks and through the top five?
This is really hard because I'm looking around and I realize I don't even know if I can put the Patriots top five because they're onto a third string quarterback. So I think the Broncos.
Yeah, but you don't rate your power ranking, at least in my opinion. I guess anybody can do whatever they want, but you don't rate a power ranking based on what you think they're going to do with this next quarterback. It's what have they done through 2 weeks. Through 2 weeks?
All right, so I would put the Patriots up there then. I'd put the Broncos up there as well. I don't really have an order established yet, but I think the Broncos have still looked really good with that defense, and Trevor Siemian still holding his own. The Eagles have to be up there. I don't like the teams they've beaten, but at the same time too, like everything looks really good and they've got a good point differential through the first few games.
Okay.
Put the Steelers up there.
That's 4.
Because once again, that's a very big thing. And then, as much as it's going to pay me to say it, put the Vikings up there. That defense looks really good. That defense looks really good. I don't know if Bradford looks as great. I don't know if Bradford is the deal, although he showed it on Sunday night, but you know what he's got working for him is Stephon Diggs, who's going to be a really good wide receiver, a weapon for the Vikings. And yeah, they lost Adrian Peterson. I understand, but like, if you can make Bradford Diggs work, like, and then lean on that defense, I think he'll be fine. Like, Peterson's production had been dipping. When I was looking at the Vikings in the preseason, I didn't even think that much about Peterson because I knew like his time was kind of coming to a close.
Okay, let me tell you how you did, first of all. By the way, as far as Peterson, I didn't think it was here yet. I thought he still had another year or two as maybe the best running back in the league or one of the top two or three. But the way they have defended him in the first 2 weeks, plus his injury, of course, maybe that is not going to prove to be correct.
Yeah.
As far as Diggs and Bradford, it's in the Vikings ranking here. You said they would be top five for you. They're actually seven in the ESPN ranking, and this stat is included. Bradford was 9 of 10 for 182 yards when targeting Diggs in that game on Monday night. 9 out of 10. So that's pretty doggone large. So they had them at number 7. Now, you were spot on New England, who is number 1 overall in the ESPN power rankings. You were spot on with the Steelers, who are number 2 overall in the ESPN power rankings. You were there with Denver, which is number 5 overall in the ESPN rankings.
Don't tell me I missed out on the Cardinals, didn't I?
I'm talking about the teams you picked. The Vikings that you picked for top 5 are actually at 7. Mm-hmm. The Eagles that you picked for top 5 are 15.
Wow.
15.
That's probably just
not too impressed with
the two
teams that they beat. They beat the worst team in the league, the Cleveland Browns, obviously, in week number 1.
And then, maybe the Bears, who are just awful.
And the Bears are awful as well, which of course was Monday night. So, and you missed out on the Cardinals. That was the fourth place or third place team, and then the Carolina Panthers, defending Western Conference.
Panthers?
I keep saying Western Conference like it's the NBA. NFC NFC champion Panthers are at number 4, even though they're 1-1.
Okay, I guess on the Panthers, I guess it kind of came down to that missed field goal for them, if that's the argument for them. I could see missing out on the Cardinals. I completely forgot that they had that close loss with New England, but I don't know, beating up on the Buccaneers doesn't really register much for me because they're the Buccaneers.
But
that's kind of why I forgot the Cardinals. Plus, again, call this East Coast bias or something. I kind of forget about them now and then, but yeah, I would probably put the Cardinals up there. I don't know if Carolina's top 5 right now, but we'll see. They've got a game coming up this week against the Vikings. So that'll be a really good one on Sunday.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. Hey, Chris, before you go, too, and Kushlin, feel free to weigh in on this, too, by the way. We won't do bottom 5, but instead of the bottom 5 in terms of worst teams, who is the biggest disappointment through 2 weeks for you? Give me one or two or three of the teams you thought should be up somewhere in that top 5, 6, 7 range, and they're not anywhere near that for you. They're big disappointments thus far.
Anybody why don't you go ahead right now? Because I'm like still digging around here and thinking about.
That's okay. Sometimes I love these kind of questions because of course usually the Browns are near the bottom.
They wouldn't be considered a disappointment. They were expected to suck and they do.
Right.
I'm talking about a disappointment. Somebody expected to be better that through 2 weeks is abysmal. And I'll give you my first one since you guys are kind of wanting to think about it a little bit. The Indianapolis Colts that the Lions beat in week 1. They're 0-2. Andrew Luck was supposed to be healthy after all of the problems he had last year. You know, they had kind of a new lease on life. They had new offensive linemen to try to protect him. And instead, Luck gets sacked 5 times in week number 2. And he's still, you know, relatively less than you know, the franchise guy he's supposed to be that he's been paid as. And we all know that 0-2 teams very rarely ever come back to make the playoffs. I think the Colts, you know, a lot of people kind of thought we're going to be right there with the Texans to win the AFC South, and I think 0-2 is a huge disappointment.
All right, I think I got mine ready. I've got 2 teams to give you. I wanted to say Bengals at 1-1, but I think, like, they lost the Steelers, so I'm not going to get too much weight on that. But the two I have, one maybe you kind of expect here to be a little better.
Okay.
At 1-1, and then I've got a team at 0-2 who maybe the name won't lend too much to them, but just looking at their talent, I thought they'd be a lot better. First off, I'll start with the expected one, the Seattle Seahawks, who, I mean, my God, like my friend Ryan said that if he could take out his entire bank account and have bet it on the Seahawks in L.A. on Sunday, he would have done it, and he would have lost all his money because who the hell sees the Seahawks dropping a game to the god-awful L.A. Rams.
And like, scoring only 3 points in it after the week before the 49ers with Blaine Gabbert putting 28 on those boys.
Yeah, yeah. That loss alone makes them in my most disappointing. And then 0-2, and I mean, again, the name lends it, the history of the team lends it to it, but I looked at this roster in the preseason. I thought this team is going to be incredibly talented. They should be winning the AFC South, and that's the Jacksonville Jaguars sitting at 0-2. I thought they'd be better than this.
You and a lot of other people really felt like they would be, too. Kush, did you have somebody?
Yeah, you know, I got a couple. I love the Seahawks answer. I really do. That's an obvious qualifier. Despite maybe differences of some parts of their roster, it's still a team with Drew Brees that has looked absolutely atrocious in the 0-2. Saints is one. The Colts are another one. And I too am going to go with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not because though that AFC South is weaker, they got blasted up by the Chargers, who are in limbo, of course. And the week before, they were at home and nearly, and to some small degree, should have taken out the Packers and Aaron Rodgers in week number one. They should at least be 1-1, and with the way the AFC South is, that'd keep them right in it. But 0-2, it makes it feel like another Jaguars bad season. So I got Jaguars, yeah, Saints, Colts, and the Seahawks as my four bad surprises.
And the thing about the Jaguars, too, is now at 0-2, they're going to be chasing 2-0 Houston as well,
yep.
Which, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, guys, those are all very, very good ones. And I would add one more on top of that, and that would be the Cleveland Browns. Because even though we expected them to suck, they suck beyond all suckitude ever having sucked. They are just that awful. That loss, honestly, I mean, they don't – look, if they played Louisville tomorrow, they'd be 8-point dogs. They would be getting 8 from Louisville, college, that is. And in fact, speaking of which, by the way, Notre Dame is another one. Huge, huge disappointment, at the college level.
I've got Michigan State fans who are on me for that, so I don't want to think about that game much.
The Cleveland Browns were so bad against Philadelphia in week one, but week two, when they jump out to that 3-touchdown lead over the Baltimore Ravens, I said the moment the extra point was blocked and returned for a safety, they were going to lose that game because they simply do not have the metal to put teams away. They were great for a half a quarter when they had those 3 straight touchdowns. They were awful for 3.5 quarters. They are worse than I thought. Cody Kessler is now the quarterback. If they win a game between now and Christmas, I'll be stunned. I cannot imagine it, even though I predicted them to be about 3-13. They are worse than I even thought they would be, and I thought they would be awful. So I'm going to throw them in the into the hopper there as well. And that's where they belong, is in the hopper. Hey, Chris Lemieux, ProdDetroit.com. Thanks for breaking down your thoughts on the Lions and the NFL. We appreciate it. We'll chat again soon.
All right. See you later, Bob.
Have a good one. There you go. Chris Lemieux joining us, talking a little pro football. And I mixed in some college football there, too, which is a perfect segue into the college and pro superstore that is the Buckeye Store and More. Football season, of course, brings you to the Buckeye Store and More for all of your Buckeye gear, scarlet and gray, everywhere. And guess what? With hundreds of new Nike products in stock right now, everything is on sale 10% store-wide. It doesn't matter what item you pick up, big or small, heavier or light, no matter what it is, it's 10% off at the Buckeye Store and More. And guess what else? You can take 50 to 75% off select items in the mornings for doorbuster items, doorbuster sales. The Buckeye Store and More is in Sylvania at Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe. Find your Buckeye gear no matter what you're looking for there. But also, if you're a Wolverines, Fighting Irish, Spartans, Rockets, Falcons, or Tigers fan, find your fan zone there as well. You can get great gear no matter who you root for at the Buckeye Store and More, 5700 Monroe in Sylvania, the Buckeye Store and More, the college and pro superstore. Now, speaking of college, how about the Bowling Green State University Falcons? They are 1-2 on the season after losing to Middle Tennessee State on Saturday. We're going to check in after this timeout with head coach Mike Jenks. He'll chat with Jim Cushlin next, right here on The Ticket.
Now, to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here. Time to talk some college football, Bowling Green Falcon style. They fell back on Saturday to Middle Tennessee at the Doit, 41-21. Up next, the final out-of-conference game this coming Saturday, night game on the road at Tough Memphis. And to help us talk all things Bowling Green Falcon football, we welcome in the head coach of the Falcons. He is head coach Mike Jenks. Hi, coach. How you doing?
Hi, Jim. Doing well.
Thanks
for having me.
No problem. Thanks so much for taking the time. So we'll start with this past game, 41-21. You guys fall at home, shut out in the second half. It felt like as this game went on, it turned into just one of those days. You guys had some issues on defense, particularly in the run game, as some of their guys just had a really good game.
Yeah, no doubt, Jim. You know, 6 minutes and 2 seconds left to go in the second quarter. You got 21-14 lead, and next thing you know, you turn around and you're down 28-21 at halftime. You know, that's that those things shouldn't happen. You know, you get a three and out, and then you get a turnover, and then you've got all the momentum in the world, and you've got your crowd into the game, and you know, you come back after halftime, and literally after the first play of the third quarter, the game was a wash. I mean, it was coming down. There really wasn't much you could do. I mean, really, I was proud of the kids and the way that they competed in that second half, because to be able to run the football up front like they were able to, when they know you're going to run it and you have no options, it's a tough thing to do. And they were able to show some toughness, and hopefully we can build on that moving forward.
Yeah, and that's one of the spots where you guys did very well. Very good ground game. Cleveland with 153 and a touchdown. You got Fred Coppett over 100, couple of touchdowns from Wilson. So that was one part you had going. And I suppose even in a loss, it's nice to know that your run game can produce like that. That could come into play as we go forward.
No doubt. I mean, you know, looking, coming into the season, we really felt like that was definitely going to be a strength of ours, especially with all the skill outside, and the quarterback hadn't played a year. And then we lost Bennett right before the season started, and had to shuffle some things around and moving Bennett over to the left tackle and moving Ryan to the right. And, you know, and sometimes it takes a little bit for those guys to gel a little bit. And really, I think they're starting to hit their stride up front, and we can lean on them a little bit when we have to. We'll be able to run the ball for the rest of the year. There's no doubt in my mind, but at the end of the thing, from the 20 to the 20, you know, you got to play more football than that, and you got to get in that red zone, and your skill guys have got to make plays, and you got to get touchdowns. So we're steadily working on that, and can't wait to get back out and give another shot come Saturday.
We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons for a little Falcon report. And on the flip side of that, for the running game, I mean, to a degree, what else can you say about Middle Tennessee's Mathers? Three touchdowns, 157 on the ground. He receives for 103 on four catches and another touchdown, so he gets the Al Bundy four touchdowns a single game. Not much more you can do about that when a guy's having a day like that.
No doubt. I mean, you know, they made their plays. He made his, and they made the explosive plays. You know, again, you know, we've got to start doing those things. You know, we're moving the ball decent, 20 to 20. We have to put the ball in the end zone, and that was the difference in the game.
And another possible difference in this game, hard to be successful, and you turn it over four times and get penalized eight times as well. Obviously, though, usually when you see numbers like that, it usually won't bode well.
No, not at all. You know, a lot of those penalties in the first half were, I'll take, because it was some of those young DBs being aggressive and playing the ball, you know, and, you know, officials don't affect the game, and I'm not going to get into that, but I like the style in which they played with. They just got to clean some things up.
Absolutely. And last thing on this one before we move forward, Coach, head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons joining us here on the Extravaganza. You mentioned early in the second quarter, you guys had a 21-14 lead. You're at home. Things seem pretty good. They put together a couple quick drives late in the half to take that 28-21 lead. Then first, really, basically first play out of the gate, they get the 78-yard dagger-type play. Walk me through some of the sequence of how the game got changed with these drives.
Well, no doubt. I mean, again, you're up 21-14. You go down. You really one of the only, I think might have been the only three and out we had the whole game. You know, and you got to understand that, you know, you got the lead. You got 6 minutes to go. You have an opportunity to really extend this thing to 14 to 10 points. That's what the good teams do. That's what the great teams do. We got to understand that moment, and we got to keep our focus in that moment. They come back, they get a quick touchdown, they make it 21-21. You know, we get the ball back, we move it right back down the field, we're on the into their territory again, and then the ball comes out of the quarterback's hand. You know, I mean, untouched. You know, and then they get a quick touchdown with a minute and 3 seconds to go in the ball game to go up 28-21. You know, kind of a dagger there. But, again, they came back in the second half. They hit the first quick little swing, easy swing pass. The rain's starting to come down. Guy misses the tackle. He takes it to the house. Then after that, like I said, you know, they had every opportunity to lay it down at that point. and it became a dogfight, and I felt like they, they finished the game the right way.
We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons here on the Extravaganza. Jim Kushlin with you. Three games in the out-of-conference down, one more to go on this Saturday. But before we get to that, give me a little update injury-wise. How are you guys faring on that front?
Well, up front, offensive line-wise, we've kind of been bit a little bit. We've got a bunch of guys with a bunch of bruises and bangs there. I think Ben Stewart left the game in the third quarter, and then J.J. went out as well. So both guards didn't finish that game. Actually, we had a Labus, who is a junior and a true freshman, in there at guards towards the end of that game. So we'll go in and we'll look at the reports today, and we'll see how that's coming about. But other than that, we're in pretty good shape.
You know, and that's good to know that there's nothing really big and serious. But when you have to change linemen like that, particularly on the offensive line during the game, does that mean do you guys simplify things at that point so the new guys that are going in there can get their feet wet and stuff like that? Or did you still basically play the game plan as you would even when you have to change linemen like that?
Jim, what you want to do is throughout the week, you're going to get about 7 or 8 guys that are going to get first team reps. You're going to carry 7 or 8 linemen into a game that are ready to roll. So normally you want to keep the game plan consistent. Now, one of the things that probably helped, in last week's game was, because of the weather, I mean, we basically ran 2 or 3 plays. I mean, because there was no throwing the football. You know, there's no throwing the football and there's no cutting back. I think if you watch the game, both teams are running the same play. They're running outside zone, inside zone for the whole second half. On both sides, because that's all you could get off. And you had Tony Franken on the other side, who is offensive guru. So if that puts things in their proper perspective there. It was probably a good thing for those kids to get in there and get all, I mean, it was about, I think we snapped off 39, 40-something plays in that second half. That's a ton of reps for those guys to get moving forward. And if they've got to be in a lineup this week, it'll serve them well.
Despite the preparation, does it help long-term, even if you didn't want to, but due to injuries, obviously, does it help to have those guys get those reps, get that experience so that it'll be much smoother the next time it may happen?
It does. I mean, looking forward and moving forward, it definitely helps. You know, now you've got some guys that have been tested. You know, there's a completely different thing between practice reps and these live game reps. So those guys have been in the games. They've been in the Aspers. They see the difference in intensity in between the two. So I think it will help moving forward.
We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons here for your weekly Falcon update here on the Extravaganza on the Ticket. Jim Kushlin here with you. Next up, you got Memphis on the road this Saturday night. Final game of out-of-conference play. And, well, what's always interesting to me, Coach, about out-of-conference scheduling in football, usually these games are put into place a couple of years before the game actually takes place. When this game was put in place, Memphis was still so-so, but now these last couple of years, they've been a pretty good up-and-coming football team over there in the American. Took a conference title very recently. Now you got to go into their building. So suddenly, this is a lot tougher game than maybe when it was originally scheduled.
No doubt, quality football team. They got a ton of great skill. Again, they got quarterback that's a JUCO transfer that can make every throw. Big, long, and fast on defense. So we'll be tested, but it's a game that we'll be in. It's a game that we'll have a chance to win, and what we've got to do is eliminate some of those mistakes, those unforced mistakes and errors, and give our chance the opportunity to play the full 60 minutes.
And obviously, in this game, as you mentioned, Memphis is a solid team, and they absolutely have been in these last couple of years. What would you say is for you, Coach, is the biggest thing you got to see out of your guys to get a road win on Saturday night?
Well, we've got to create turnovers defensively, and we got to keep from having them offensively. And if we do those things, or even limit them, you know what I mean? We give ourselves the opportunity to win this thing late. We've got the playmakers to do it. It's time to step up and make plays.
It's the Falcons on the road at Memphis of the American Athletic. That's a night game this coming Saturday. 7 o'clock the pregame time. You can catch it over on Talk Radio 1470. 8 o'clock the kick. Coach, best of luck on you on that one. And when we reconvene next week, we're talking about a Bowling Green Falcons win, and B, we'll be getting ready for that all important MAC play, which will start after that. So best of luck out there on Saturday, Coach, and hopefully we're talking about a Falcon win coming up next week.
You got it. Thanks, Jim.
That is head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jenks, taking a few minutes to talk to us. 41-21 Falcons fell at home to Middle Tennessee. They're now 1-2 on the season. It's going to be tough to go even 2-2 because, as I mentioned, you know, that's just the funkiness sometimes of scheduling these out-of-conference games in college football. There was a period where Memphis was solidly, oh, yeah, that's a basketball school. They're terrible on the football field. And it was about that time when the Falcons and Memphis agreed to play this particular game. Now, when you actually flash forward to when the game actually takes place, Memphis is now in their third season of being a pretty solid football team. I know it's not the Big Ten or anything. It's the American Athletic, but they won the conference title two seasons ago. They've been in bowl games now for three straight years, so suddenly this Memphis football team, not as much of a pushover as they used to be, so the Falcons are absolutely going to have their hands full. It would be unfortunate if they go into MAC play next week, and next Saturday, October 1st, is the beginning of MAC play for the Falcons. They'll be back at the Deut, by the way, that afternoon for Eastern Michigan. But you would like to go into MAC play 2-2, and I guess the only positive is even if you're 1-3, at least that conference record is still 0-0. And that's where the Falcons are really obviously going to have to make their hay. So far, this Mid-American Conference, particularly the East Division, doesn't seem all that good. The West Division right now is where the strength is. You got the Rockets undefeated. You got Central Michigan, who, despite the call in that debate, they're undefeated right now, and they took out an Oklahoma State team. Again, even though they probably shouldn't have been able to run that play, it is what it is. They're not going to reverse it. And then you got Northern Illinois, who's struggled, but as we've said over and over again, especially from a Rocket point of view, you got to be able to beat Northern Illinois to finally progress forward. But right now, the East Division is kind of honestly up in the air at this point. And again, we really haven't started MAC play at all, as I'm double checking the standings. Yeah, nobody's played a MAC game yet, but right now Akron is the only team above 500 in the East Division at 2-1. Bowling Green, Ohio, Kent State, they're all 1-2, and Buffalo and Miami are winless. So when you get into MAC play, this East Division is still pretty wide open, and one has to figure the Falcons, along with probably Ohio, there are some outside thinking Kent State will be challenging for that East Division title. The strength right now is in the West Division, Western, Central, and Toledo, all 3-0. Northern, ironically, is 0-3, but again, nobody started MAC play, so you'd like to be 2-2. It'll make you feel good going into an Eastern Michigan game. And, of course, Eastern Michigan is still, until further notice, Eastern Michigan. So you'd hope that they can get things going on the right foot, and a win against a solid Memphis team on the road may be the kind of thing to do that. And that's going to do it for this Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks, as always, for hanging out with us. Back tomorrow for another outstanding episode. Stay tuned. Drive Time, Mike Miller.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.